I'm not sure what to call it. It's the it's the E12 Education Finance Working Group, and I'll emphasize working group. So thank you for everybody coming, and it is not a conference committee as such, and we were reminded that as Representative Greiling and I presented it to the budget conference committee yesterday. It seems like longer ago than that, but so we what we wanted to do and is to try to bring together all of you who are interested, at least many, all of you plus there's probably others that are interested in the issues surrounding the education finance policy issues. To kind of lay out to you the many of the issues that Representative Greiling and I and many of you have been working on the last several days. And we kind of both, I think both House and Senate took it very seriously when our leadership told us to get started, get moving. We want this done. And so when we got that directive shortly after the bills were passed, we started looking at the both the House and the Senate language and tried to piece together the very best education bill, finance bill that we could, realizing that this is a budget balancing year, and so that many divisions are actually in a position where they have to cut significant amounts of money out of their budgets that they passed last year. Thanks to the governor, and he kind of set the tone in the area of education and what was expected of education in this supplemental budget balancing year. All of us, the governor, the House, the Senate, took an approach towards education of not, in a sense, balancing the budget, the state budget, on the backs of our school districts and our students across the state. So what we've tried to do is to work with that whole concept. In presentations in our committee, I've emphasized in our finance committee, I've emphasized that even though the governor and the House and the Senate don't cut education as much as many of the other divisions, many of our school districts across the state, if not all of them, have budget reductions, and some of them quite significant budget reductions because of referendums that were not passed or just sheer inflationary increases that were put on school districts through higher fuel costs, higher energy costs, and so on. So all of the education arena has been under enormous pressure. So I think that the proposal that we'll try to lay out for you today is not one to push the school districts into the black, but it's more or less to try to ease the pressure, the financial pressure that many of our districts are under. And so I think Representative Greiling and the House and the Senate language, the approach I think we've taken is to try to scavenge every single tool, financial tool, that we might have at our disposal to look at how we might be able to assist school districts in this period where the financial pressure is very, very tough. And so that's kind of the overall picture, and I don't know if you would like to offer some comments to fill that out. Representative Greiling?
Thank you, Senator Stump. You said it well, and I think you just called us scavengers. And I think that is very, very apropos, because we have really scavenged everywhere for the bill that we have before us, and it is a bill that we're trying to keep school districts afloat with, while we look forward to next session when we have a much bigger budget year, the first year of the biennium, and where we can look at the education finance reform and the adequacy of the budget for education. Because we know, when we've heard from so many people in this room who have been so eloquent on behalf of students, that we need to do a better job and we have to be very thoughtful and planful as we go forward. So Senator Bonhoeff and I have a proposal to have us look at aggressively next year that many of you have worked on and helped with, and we hope to get input on it throughout the interim and then come forward next year with senators and House members perfecting it and getting something forward in our budgets that would be the centerpiece, hopefully, in education next year. But as far as what we've got here this year, I think Senator Stump has laid it out very well, and we have worked really fast. It's been a pleasure to work with Senator Stump in some preliminary discussions that we'll now flesh out and discuss more thoroughly today.
Thank you, Representative Garland. I think the order that we'll try to go through this will be, we're going to first go through the budget spreadsheet, and we'll make some comments and as we go through, and then we will also hand out, and I think members have this in your packet, there are district runs for three different provisions, and so we'll make mention of that as we go through the spreadsheet to help you kind of visualize more in terms of what this will mean to the district. So if I can ask the House and Senate fiscal staff to take us through, and members, the budget sheet I believe is in your black binders. It's the horizontal sheets that look like this, so I don't know who will.
It's in the green folders. Yeah.
Oh, it's in the green folders. I'm sorry.
Might be in the black.
All right.
Mr. Chair, if members could just hold, make sure they're looking at the one in the upper left-hand corner that says April 15th, 2008, 9:28 a.m. That'll just help make sure we're all on the same page.
Okay, that's important, because if you look in your offices, you'll probably have several stacks of these sheets over the last several years.
Mr. Chair, ours says 8:44 a.m.
Mr. Crow?
Oh. Mr. Chair and members, no, that should be the same document.
8:44.
We printed them out on the Senate side so that we could have them put in your packets, but they're the same document.
Okay, who's going to start this off?
Well, Mr. Chair and members, maybe I'll start and do the first half or so, and then when my voice gives out, I'll give it to Mr. Crow to clean things up. I'll just orient members across the columns first. You have the first five or six columns or so are the House recommendations, so that would be the House recommendations coming into this working group. On the far right hand side are the Senate recs, and in this particular case we have put the working group recommendations that you are considering smack dab in the middle. So working group rec 0809 are the primary columns that we'll be looking at, and working group minus the base, which is the difference, working group minus base is the column that I think we'll spend most of our time with. That shows the relative to the February forecast. So the first line item is the K-12 reciprocity with neighboring states. This has a fiscal effect in fiscal 10 and 11. We accepted the Senate numbers in this proposal, $86,000. The second line item is the $51 per pupil one time. The House recommendation was accepted in this proposal, K-12 carrying a $43 million, almost $44 million impact. Then the Q-comp limitation on line 6, which was carried in some form in both bills, the House recommendation was accepted for the date. The House had a few extra districts that had applied, so there are savings of $20.5 million in fiscal 09, and members will note that an extra year relative to the House proposal was included, so that Q-comp savings will be generated into fiscal year 2010, and then the savings stopped. The Senate initiative went out to 5 years. The House had one, so the compromise in this recommendation is for 2 years. In the Senate bill on line 7, there was also a rollout of alternative compensation in the Senate bill, and that proposal is accepted. So that will, if this proposal is included in the final bill, there will be the Q-comp program will be rolled out of general education. On line 9, there was a governor's recommendation that was included in the Senate package to do sort of a correction of the shift that was included back from the 2002 legislative session. That is accepted in this proposal, and it carries a $6.1 million savings. The next line item that includes change is the line 12. I'm told I skipped line 8. Is that true?
Yes.
Sorry?
That's the centerpiece.
Yeah, I think that it's probably a little...
We'll have to reconsider his
with Mr. Chairman, my intent was to skip over it so that I could highlight it at the end.
Okay.
Line 8, since you asked, was the elimination of the permanent school trust fund subtraction, and the compromise includes doing the $51 in the current biennium as the House had recommended, and then picking up the elimination of the subtraction in the tails. So districts will receive revenue off of that beginning in fiscal 10, 11, and into the future. And because I was so excited about line 12, I'm going to go back to that with your indulgence. The Rushford-Peterson proposal that was carried in both bills to give that school district, that flood-affected district, additional revenue beginning in 09 and continuing through 10 was accepted, $158,000. And then Lancaster, we accepted the House position, giving them $100,000 for 3 years beginning in fiscal 2009. The next line item is the statewide testing, and the Senate recommendation was accepted in this proposal, reducing the statewide testing appropriation to $12.9 million in 2009 and then $13 million in 2010 and later. The funding for the Humanities Commission, the Historical Society, and the Principals Leadership, similar to the Senate position, although they will be funded as not included as best practices, but a separate appropriation in each bill. That was the Senate position. It's included in the recommendation. The Advanced Placement IB College in the Schools line item that was funded last year's budget session, which included a elimination of the tails in the Senate package, was not accepted, so the House position was accepted there. On Get Ready, Get Credit, lines 22 and 23, the Senate position making reductions to those line items of $1.9 million and $658,000 in 2008 and 2009 was accepted, and the tails was eliminated on those programs. Members will recall I mentioned that the general education Q-comp has been rolled out, so that shows up as a negative line item on line 7, and then shows up as a positive on line 26, so those are offsetting. The House and Senate both had a special education task force increase of $20,000. We fund that in fiscal 08, similar to the House position. Then the Rushford-Peterson Facilities Grant reductions. Both House and Senate had positions on this. The Senate zeroed out the appropriation, and that position was accepted. Both bodies eliminated the disaster relief funding for Mabel Canton, Houston, and the disaster facilities relief grants was reduced from $90,000 to $14,000. Those were all governor's recommendations. Members will note that funding was reallocated up to Rushford Peterson. So that's where that $158,000. This is an appropriation that we, in a sense, overfunded in the special session. So this is not money that these districts were going to use. So we reallocated it. The Virginia facilities grant that was included in the House position as an aid appropriation, we will talk about on the levy side. The school breakfast, kindergarten milk carton reimbursement is included at the Senate position, increasing to $402,000 and $852,000 in the tail. Plainview, similarly, we will talk about on the levy side. The health and developmental screening was accepted at the Senate position, and then I think that concludes the education finance aids. And I will pause and let Mr. Crow do the department.
Okay, Mr. Crow.
Mr. Chair and members, if you turn to top of page 2, you can look at the state agency budget. The House had 2 changes to the agency budget. The Senate had several more. Both the House and the Senate have on line 46 a general operating budget reduction of 4%. Senate had an additional $30,000 in 09. This would include the House position of the 4% reduction. And then on 47, both House and Senate had money for an education achievement task force, and this would put $50,000 in for that task force. Then the balance of the changes were Senate changes that were not included in here. And if you drop down to line line 61, you see the net general fund aid change that would be proposed here. And if you look at the difference working group minus base, you see a number of $13,392,000. That's about halfway between the base change that was in the Senate bill and was in the House bill. The House had a little over $20 million, and the Senate was right around no net change. So there's about $13 million of additional spending over base, and then if you look in the tails, the number is $27,172. So another, basically the funding continues on through the tail, so that the 3-year average is around $13 million per year. Then on the bottom of the page, starting at line 75, is the detail of the special revenue fund. The House and Senate both had provisions allowing the Board of Teaching to do licensure by portfolio. The House language, and thus the dollar amounts from the House bill, were picked up here with a slightly different fee structure and appropriation method. Then if you go to page 3, you can look at the levy changes. On line 89 is a levy for the reciprocity transition. The Senate had a slightly higher amount due to the transition change for Lancaster in the Senate bill, and those numbers, actually the 23 and 24 should be added to 10 and 11, shouldn't show up in 8 and 9. Then line 90, 91, and 94 are all related to the Senate tax bill, so those aren't those will be addressed with general language rather than having to track a specific dollar amount. So those are just zeroed out. Then line 92 is the fiscal 2011 reduction in QComp, the levy side tied into the aid on the other page, so that's about $6.4 million. If you look down to line 101, you can see that the fiscal 09 levy impact is also captured in fiscal 10 because of the pay years that are used as property taxes. So that reduction will be actually be accomplished in fiscal 2010. Then on line 93 and 96, you see the rollout of alternative compensation from the general education program. It shows up as a negative in the general fund, and then a positive of the same amount on line 96 outside of the general ed levy in the general fund. And then on line 95, the Senate had a provision to take the ice arena levy from 90% of cost to 100% of cost, and that's included here. And then on line 98 and 99, two fund transfers that were in the Senate bill are included here. Line 100, the building lease increase that was in the Senate bill is included here. And line 103, the House and Senate both had provisions allowing for 15-year versus 10-year bonds, and that has a small offsetting change within the debt service fund. And then finally, on line 105, the Virginia School District, rather than having a grant as in the House bill or a levy or a fund transfer as in the Senate bill, would be allowed to just have a special levy of $100,000 for their facilities needs. So you can see the net change for the biennium for fiscal 10 and 11 is a property tax reduction of $1.3 million. And 1336 in the working group minus base difference column.
Okay, thank you. Now, I think what we'll do is just to have the fiscal staff go through the run that we have. Have you been handed those? The numbers? Okay. And then they tie back to the language or the budget sheet that we just went through. So I don't know who.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Melman?
To try to correct for my shortcoming before, maybe I'll mention line 8 again.
Okay.
And reference the data run that permanent school trust fund revenue distribution. The data run that looks like this. It has your signature up at the top. You have this? Maybe I stole yours. I think it's in the folder, Mr. Chairman. So I think most members are familiar with what is happening here, but under current law, revenue that is generated out the permanent school trust fund lands, either through a sale of permanent school trust fund lands or timber revenue or minerals revenue, by constitution it is deposited in the permanent school trust fund, which is then invested by the State Board of Investment. Any interest and dividends that is spun off of that accrues to the fund is then allocated to the districts based on their resident ADM from the prior year. And that is what happens now. Also, what happens now under current law, going back to 1971, is a subtraction of general fund monies to school districts in an equal amount to the interest and dividends that is allocated to the districts. So a dollar going to districts from permanent school trust funds generates a dollar of savings to the general fund. And the Senate proposal that is included here to begin in fiscal year 09 is the elimination of that general fund subtraction. So that generates new money to school districts because we're no longer taking that subtraction or that savings. So what this data run shows you is the, in effect, the general education general fund subtraction under current law, that $28.8 million, and I apologize, we haven't updated this for 09. This is what was originally in the Senate proposal. But I think it shows you how it would work. The distribution of permanent school trust funds subtraction by district. So you'd see an Aiken reduction of $44,700, and the Senate proposal was to go to zero, which, when you make the comparison, shows $44,000 of new revenue to that school district. In total, the 09 distribution would have been $28.8 million on a statewide basis, and it's evenly allocated based on the prior year's resident ADM. So members can see how that distributes by school district.
Do you want to go through the...
I think we'll let the House do that.
Okay. Mr. Crow?
Mr. Chair, one of the other printouts you have in front of you is relates to the... Actually, do you want to do operating capital analysis?
Why don't you wait? Why don't you wait on that one?
You want to do building use? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's three other printouts in the packet. I believe we've briefly touched on a few of these things. If you go to the one labeled Building Lease Levy Taxes Payable in 2008, that's oriented portrait style on the page. One of the levy changes that Mr. Crow mentioned was that the building lease levy was being increased. The maximum amount of that levy is being increased. What this printout shows is to give a sense of which school districts are right up against the cap now. The printout's organized in ascending district order, and you can see the pupil count, whether or not they're a member of the intermediate school district, and then the amount of the lease that they certified for taxes payable in 2008, and then that same amount on a per pupil basis. So essentially, this printout is the basis for the change. Those are at or near the cap are going to be the ones that would benefit from the adoption of the provision of the Senate bill that increases the building lease.
All right. Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Bonhoff.
Senator Sum, could you say again where we find the information regarding the intermediate school districts?
Senator Bonhoff, in the districts that are members of intermediate school districts, in the middle of that printout, they're labeled as yes, if they are a member of the intermediate
school
district.
Thank you.
Are you going to go through that?
Mr. Chair, members, a large portion of the money in the bill is the additional 1% of new money for fiscal year 2009. This money is distributed on a per pupil basis, on an AMCPU per pupil basis. Each district gets an additional $51 per pupil for fiscal year 2009. That printout is in your folder based on the February 2008 forecast. Shows the pupil count in each district and then the new general education revenue that each of those districts would be entitled to under that provision.
Okay. Any questions that members have at this point? There's one more printout, but we'll go through that one when we go through some of the issues that we have in the bill. So, Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Nauman indicated, I believe on the first sheet, and I'm not sure if I understood it correctly, that in the best practices grants that the Senate position was taken, but it doesn't appear to be quite that way. Could you clarify, or am I reading it wrong?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, I'd be happy to. I understand that might be a little bit confusing. You recall when the Senate bill went through committee, we recreated the so-called best practices grants, and then we had riders on that grant of $275,000 for the humanities, $200,000 for the historical society. There was $160,000 for New Visions, and $275,000 for the Principal's Leadership Institute. That was the governor's recommendation. The House appropriated the Principal's Leadership Institute as a separate appropriation, not inside the best practices grant. And the recommendation before you today is to, in a sense, take the Senate position minus not funding New Visions, but appropriate them separately, not inside best practices, but as a separate appropriation for each of those other three items. So when we ultimately draft the bill, you'll see a humanities appropriation, a historical appropriation, and a principal's leadership appropriation. We felt that was a bit more transparent than showing it as best practices grant.
Mr. Chairman, but the New Visions was left out.
Correct.
Is there a reason for that?
Senator Olson, Representative Riley?
Yeah. Senator Olson, that was not agreeable to the House. And long term, I think we should discuss when we look at our education finance reform, having all of these types of best practices grants be not fund it at the state level, but instead have them market to the local districts, because they get staff development funding at the local districts. The education finance reform proposal is proposing innovation revenue of things that would help close the achievement gap if students aren't making value-added growth. So last year, you may recall, the House had, you know, it was $20 million worth of projects like that or close to it. And so, you know, the more we fund those, the more we have people coming to us and wanting them funded like we did last year. So, you know, we're in the mind that the trend would be to have them market to the local district as they do right now and not come to the state for a special line item.
Senator Olson, it seems funny because I do support the new vision strongly, because our little school district in my hometown, Plummer, has a program through New Visions, and a number of rural districts have that, and they have Plummer this year is getting an national award for School of Excellence, and to a large extent it's because of all of the kids, even in a very poor small community, all the kids are doing well, and I think it's, you know, because of programs like that. But I think that we have to find a way to continue those good programs somehow. Mm-hmm. Any other questions on that? Otherwise, we're going to go and start and go through some of the language in the Representative Hikers.
Yes, before we get to the language, I do have concerns, and Representative Crowley knows that. On line 9 on the SOD, reverse on the payments right now, for those of you that are not familiar with what's being done there, is we're delaying payments to school districts that are in SOD. And it's something that's been in law, I think, since 2002. And I know that we had discussion, those of you who were on conference committees before, on this particular issue. But it gives a school district that's an SOD 97% of their money up front. In comparison, the school districts that are not in SOD are getting 90%. So what you're doing is, by delaying the payments, you're requiring the school districts that cannot pass referendums that are already in statutory operating debt to borrow even more money. So, I mean, I have a very hard time when we talk about trying to help students and trying to help schools, and some, of course, are treated more fairly than others, as we well know, especially those who have been sitting on this task force the last summer and going over how we fund education. But this is something that I still have it still sticks in my throat a little bit, that we're going out after somebody, and I realize it was not the Senate's proposal, that it was the governor's proposal to do this. And I have a hard time with that, of going after school districts that are already hurting.
Representative Heidkirk, that was a statement. All right.
I can't call enough to hold here.
Okay, members, what one of the directions that we were given was to try to take as much policy out of our finance bills as possible. And I realize that we tried on the, I think both House and Senate, but I can just speak for the Senate side right now, but we tried to, because there is a policy bill that's coming down that both House and Senate have, and yesterday there was a lively discussion in the Budget Conference Committee over policy, you know, and how does that budget committee resolve all of the policy issues that are in some of these bills? And I think the leader of the charge was Senator Bessel on the Senate side, and I think that's that becomes a real problem. So one of the things that I think we're trying to do is to be sure that the finance bill is very closely related to finance and not containing a lot of provisions relating to new policy or policy in general. And that really should be the discussion in the policy committee. So the proposal that you have that looks like this is an attempt to go through and look at the different provisions in both House and Senate and to find a home for those, for that language, and or for the issue. In some cases, most of it's resolved, I think, but in some cases there's some unresolved issues. So I'd like to do is to go through this and have a discussion about it and see if we can come together on by the time we're done here, especially with those that are unresolved. So how do we want to do this?
Maybe we should have...
Mr. Chair?
Senator Stogan?
Thank you, Senator Stump. If I could just ask a question before we start on how we came up with this. I mean, was there a...
Sure. What Senator Scogan and members, what this was basically working our way through the side-by-side, which is what you have in here. And as you know, the direction was given to us to, go and get this resolved and from the budget conference committee. So Representative Grayling and myself and staff and several others have tried to go through this and look at, is this policy, should it be in the finance bill, what's the connection if it isn't, and where should it, because remember, both House and Senate has passed these provisions, so these are legitimate issues that should be resolved by the legislature and sent to the governor, because both House and Senate, or one or the other bodies, has passed these. So it's not to say these are out, but they may. It's to find the correct place or home for it, so that we can resolve the budget and also discuss. Because the policy, education policy committee needs to get into a conference and will get into a conference. I believe that bill will be coming up on the Senate floor. It was just passed out of the finance committee on Monday. Or no, was it Monday?
Yeah, Monday.
Monday.
Yesterday.
And so that'll be coming up on the floor of the Senate. And I don't know where the House.
It's on the
floor, and so that'll be coming up shortly in the House. So, and so it's not, we don't actually we don't actually do anything except figure out where the right home is for these provisions. We don't have to amend something. I mean, it's just whether it's being taken up in the budget conference committee or taken up in the policy conference committee. So, do we want to go through these? And okay. The first one is the academic standards, physical education, and that I believe. Yeah, maybe Shelby, and then you can say whether there's a fiscal. Okay, and maybe Mr. Strom, you want to, since I believe this is...
Sure, Mr. Chair, members, the list that you have in front of you is summarizing the provisions that are in the side-by-side. You may want to look at the language itself in your black folders. the House language being on the left and the Senate language being on the right. This five-page printout has essentially taken the headings and some of the language from each of those sections just to identify them, but try to boil that all down for you onto a few pieces of paper with the House again on the left and the Senate provisions on the right, going down in the order that they're listed in the bill article. As you just mentioned, Mr. Chair, the first two sections of the House bill have to do with the requirement for physical education. And in the middle column, which is labeled proposed action, after the discussions yesterday in the full House File 1812 Conference Committee, there was a request that working groups look to make sure that anything that was not directly related to money be moved elsewhere. So the action listed there, move to a policy debate, is what's listed in that column. In Section 3, Mr. Chair, the CLEP program, there's some changes in the funding for that program that was accepted when we talked about the work, when we went through the spreadsheet. That essentially means that there's probably not a need for the House position on the examination fees for CLEP.
And Mr. Chair and members, Article 3, Section 1 of the Senate bill is the Governor's Virtual Education Program, and it was not accepted by the House, and so that provision is gone. In House Sections 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9, and then on the Senate side as well, those items are Senator Rummel and Representative Reinert's bill on changing the report cards. And those items were unresolved and look to be talked about today. And then the developmental screening, as was mentioned in the spreadsheet walkthrough, the Senate position was accepted.
Mr. Chair, Section 10 of the House bill and 3 of the Senate, or 8 rather, of the Senate Article 3 were similar. The Senate fee language raised a little more money than was necessary, so the proposed action here would be the House fee language. Section 11 on the local school district wellness policies, this provision complements the PE standards. Recommendation here, since it didn't relate to money, to move it to the policy committee.
Article 3, Section 12 of the Senate bill is a teacher institute. That was the governor's provision that was talked about in the spreadsheet, and it was not accepted, so it's not included here, and the language is not included.
Mr. Chair, members, Section 12 of the House bill would authorize groups of school districts to form a consortium, essentially to participate in wind energy conversion systems. There's no direct relation to appropriations, so the suggestion here is to move it to the policy debate.
Just on that issue, there were actually two provisions relating to wind energy, I believe, in the House side. One provision, and I should have staff explain this, but one provision was,
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, the two different provisions. The one we just mentioned does not have to do with the production tax, but rather has to do with how school districts can form together in order to participate in wind energy projects. There's some provisions of federal tax law that have made it attractive for groups of school districts to join together for this, but this particular policy piece doesn't involve the production tax. Later on in the bill, when we get to Section 31, which is on the bottom of page 2 here, this is a funding provision, and this relates to a change that was made by last year's legislature. Essentially, last year, for a number of years now, wind energy has not been subject to property tax, but rather is subject to a production tax. And the school share of that was simply 6% of the production tax went to the individual school district where the wind energy facility was located. Last year, governor's recommendation that was adopted by the K-12 conference committee was to have that be an offset against the district's other general education aids instead of additional revenue to the school district. The proposal in the House, Section 31, would have undone that and would have essentially returned that money to the school district as additional revenue instead of having it as an offset to the district's other aid.
Representative Bradley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The House, while we agreed last year that the governor's provision was good policy, and we actually still agree with that this year, we put it in, though, because the taconite tax did get an offset this year, that where they do get funding for their schools. And we thought if we should not be treating the taconite tax one way and the wind tax another way. And so now that the Senate is not taking this provision of the House, we do end up with that situation. So look for more discussion on wind and taconite next year in the Education Finance Committee.
Mr. Strom?
Mr. Chair, thank you. Sections 13 of the House and Article 2, Section 1 of the Senate, the recommendation here regarding the superintendent's report on the cost. The Senate had a different proposal. The House would have struck that report entirely. The recommendation here was to move it to policy since there isn't a direct financial relationship to the bill.
Mr. Chair, Article 4, Section 1 of the Senate bill is the debt service appropriation. This just updates the statutory appropriation language to ensure to the bondholders that the money will be there in fiscal year 11, 10 and 11. The Section 14 of the House and Article 4, Section 5 of the Senate is the Alternative Facilities Revenue Program. The House and the Senate had varying language on this. There was an exception in the language under the House bill, and the Senate bill just included Roseville as the exception, and the House position was accepted there. Section 15, Article of the House, and Article 4, Section 2 of the Senate, bonds for certain capital facilities. This was language that extended the bonding payback time from 10 years to 15 years, and the Senate position was accepted in that provision because of an addition of some securities updates that are allowed to be used with that money. Article 3, Section 13 of the Senate is the Regional Pupil Transportation Services, and because there was no direct appropriation tied here, this provision was moved to the policy.
Representative Marion.
Yes, sir, I apologize. I just want to go back very quickly to the Section 13 in the House, the superintendent's language, and just get a little information and clarification from fiscal staff. I know that there's no fiscal note associated with that language, but common logic tells me that there's some kind of a savings that would accrue to the department by virtue of no longer having to collect and report back. And I'm not quite sure to what degree they have been doing reporting on the superintendent's report. So I'm just wondering if fiscal staff can comment on any thoughts you might have in terms of savings issues related to eliminating the school superintendent's annual report.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mariani, I think in part that is the original test that the bodies may have applied when including those pieces of language in the finance package in the original outset. I know that was the logic when the Senate made some technical adjustments to improve the operation of that report. And then, as you know, the House repealed that report altogether. I think with further guidance from the chairs of the Finance Conference Committee, we applied a more rigorous test that if it was not directly related to an appropriation, with a few exceptions, the proposal before you is to ask to move those policy items that don't have a direct appropriation tie to the policy debate.
And Mr. Chair, I don't want to challenge at all the rationale. I think it's a good working rationale for the work before us. But I do just want to express that it seems to me, relative to the department's position, that if there's adoption eventually of the House position, there's a savings to the department. I guess I'm just saying I think that there's a cogent argument that could be made there. Of course, I don't know how you quantify, that has not been quantified yet. But I just want to be able to alert us to that possibility. Representative Grally.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Mariani and others. I think, your comments could apply to a lot of things we're discussing here that we're sending to policy or not. I think it's splitting hairs, and hopefully we will not be having to make these distinctions in the future, and we'll have one bill where we can discuss everything more fruitfully. It's an odd year.
Where did we leave off?
Mr. Chair and members, the House sections 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, and 21 and the comparable Senate provisions have to deal with the governor's recommendation on reciprocity. In 16, section 16, the House position was accepted. That was inadvertently probably left out of the Senate. And the rest of those provisions were accepted from the Senate. There was a couple of updates after the House language was put into place. And then Article 3, Sections 14, 15, 16, 17, 18 has to do with online learning, and those provisions were moved to the policy bill.
Mr. Chair, members, Section 22 on the House side is the leave to teach in a charter school. Again, the recommendation here was to move that to the discussion for the policy bill.
Section 1, the reimbursement of the increase to school milk from 14 cents to 20 cents, the Senate position was accepted. That was discussed when we were talking about this, going over the spreadsheet. And then Section 23 of the House and Article 7, Section 2 of the Senate, the state total adult basic education aid, that was essentially the same in both bills. The Senate, House position was accepted for technical reasons.
Mr. Chair, members, Section 24 on the House side was the increase in the maximum amount that could be paid for the GED test from $20 to $40. The House provision was recommended there.
Article 6, Section 1 of the Senate is the Committee on American Indian Education Programs. This provision doesn't carry a cost, and so it was moved to the policy bill.
Mr. Chair, members, Section 25 has to do with third-party billing with the Minnesota State Academies, and this affects the distribution, or potentially could affect the distribution of the special ed revenue among school districts.
Section 26 of the House and Article 2, Section 7 of the Senate, again, has to do with reciprocity, and the Senate position was accepted there. The language is virtually the same. And then in Article 2, Section 8 of the Senate, the general education revenue, this makes minor adjustments for the rollout of alternative compensation programs, and the Senate position was accepted there. And then Article 2, Sections 9, 12, and then a later provision that was discussed when we were going through the spreadsheet. Mr. Crow discussed that the general language is just going to be inserted for this change. There was a tax-based change that was included in the tax bill, and general language is just going to be included there and no cost carried.
Representative Mariani.
Sure, and again, I apologize. I'm always going backwards because I kind of think about things a little bit longer. But back on Section 24, just very quickly, my understanding is that change is revenue neutral. Is that correct? Okay. All
right. Yes, Mr. Chair. Mm-hmm.
Okay,
Mr. Chair, members, Section 29 is the, all right, I don't know if we talked about Section 27. This is the Lancaster transition revenue section. There, it says two bills had a slightly different approach to how to deal with Lancaster. And I believe this is the Lancaster transition, and then in 28 is the transition for tuition reciprocity, which goes with the other tuition changes that were presented earlier. Section 29 is the referendum ballot language. The House and Senate had similar language regarding what should appear on the operating referendum ballot. The proposal is to take the Senate language on what's actually printed on the ballot itself. Section 30, it was the House proposal on how to deal with the permanent school fund money by essentially capturing the excess. As Mr. Nauman mentioned earlier, the Senate approach of taking the whole amount of permanent school funds for revenue for school districts instead of an aid offset means that this provision is no longer necessary. Section 31 we talked about a few minutes ago, which is the wind energy production tax.
Representative Mariani.
I feel like I'm a little bit of a pet, but I think it's important just to be real clear about all these things. So back in Section 29, the revenue, the referendum revenue, it's language that I do support, and I'm glad to see that both House and Senate are strongly supportive of that. Our school districts need this language, but it appears to me that this is pure policy language. There's no relationship to the fiscal sheet whatsoever. I do support the desire to keep this here, but I just want to state that and be clear about that this is a non spreadsheet related provision. Is that correct?
Representative Mariani, I don't think it is correct. You're talking about the new language for the referendum?
That's correct.
I don't think it would be asked for if it was revenue neutral. The change.
We're not.
We're not carrying a number on it, which is correct, but somebody tell me why we asked for the change why we changed it if it wasn't isn't going to have an impact.
And Mr. Chair, you know, technically Mariani is right, it's revenue neutral, but of course Senator Stump is right as well by saying we're hoping more levies will pass. If it's clear that that it will be a wash in terms of the taxpayers' tax bill, if they renew a levy, it won't increase it, it won't decrease it, and we're just trying to make that clear. And I think you bring up a very good point, Representative Mariani, again, you know, it's splitting hairs as to what goes in which bill.
And Mr. Chair, I would just say I support the decision of the working group, at least the over here, to do this. But, you know, it is, I suppose, reflective of the different situation we find ourselves in here in regards to this.
I think the language issue is one that got tossed around a lot in the Education Policy Committee, at least on the Senate side, in the Education Finance Committee, in the Tax Committee. I mean, each stop it kind of got, you know, had quite a lengthy discussion, and it all hinged around fairness. You know, words mean something. Or unfairness in the existing language. So,
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, I think one could argue several ways. You could argue that it belongs in the tax bill, too. But I think that it clearly can have, it could have, that by clarity of language change, have a financial impact. And so I think I'm perfectly willing to accept it here, and I don't think it should jeopardize the budget bill. For those who might think it's just policy.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Mr. Chair, on the top of page 3, the Senate Article 2, Section 18, this was increased the allowable lease levy from 100 to 150, and then also for members of intermediates from 25 to 43, and the Senate position was accepted. In Section 32 of the House, the safe schools levy was increased last year. This year, the additional language reserves $3 for counselors. And then in Article 4, Section 3, the ICE Arena levy was increased from 90% to 100% of the operating costs, and the Senate position was accepted there. And then in Sections 33 through 37 of the House and Sections 19 through 23 of the Senate, the Senate position was accepted here for the language is virtually the same. This allows tax anticipation borrowing for intermediate school districts. And the Senate language was increased or was accepted for technical reasons. The Section 38 of the school endowment fund, the use of the revenue, the House had a reserve for technology, and that was not accepted. In Section 39, the payments to third parties. In Section 24, that had to do with the reciprocity, and that was Senate language. And then Sections 25 and 26 of the Senate abatements and excess tax, or excess tax increments. This was a technical provision that the department brought forward, and the Senate position was accepted here. and then to appropriations. There were some adjustments that Mr. Nauman and Mr. Carr went through on the spreadsheet, and this just pulls in the language here. And then I guess down to Section 41 of the House, the Special Education Task Force, and the report, which is Section 23 of the Senate. The House position was accepted here because of the way it was appropriated. The extra $20,000 for the task force was put into place right away, and so the task force doesn't have to wait until fiscal year 08, until July 1 to have that money. In Section 43 of the House and Section 3 of the Senate, this was a technical change, costing $7,000 to the Plainville, Elgin, Millville schools. This was a somewhat technical fix that the word aid was included last year, and that needs to be changed to revenue, so there's a little bit of a levy cost there.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair.
Oh,
I'm going to play Representative Mariana. I'm going to back this up to line 40 or section 40. What was the difference between the House and the Senate positions on the APIB concurrent enrollment?
Mr. Chair and Senator Rummel, the difference, this is appropriation language that we're dealing with. The Senate language had eliminated the tail, which was $2 million a year to achieve some savings to conform with Senate targets. The House position was accepted, so we are, it's somewhat a technical matter which appropriation we're picking up, but in this case we're to conform with the spreadsheet and to pick up that tail, so the $2 million a year will be appropriated under the recommendation before you.
And Mr. Chair, both bills had a technical change on the appropriation making carry forward, so we, that's why we actually picked up the House section.
Mr. Chair and members, sections 44 through 47 of the House and sections 2, 28, 29, and 30 deal with the appropriations to the Department of Education, and then the flood appropriations that Mr. Nauman and Mr. Crow went through when we went over the spreadsheet. And then I will pass off the fund transfers.
Mr. Chair, members, Section 48 in the House bill is the start of the fund transfers on the House side. Of the first of the fund transfers that's in the House bill in Section 48 is a provision that allows any school district to transfer up to $51 from its reserve for operating capital account to its unreserved general fund balance. There's a printout in your packet in the green sleeve that Mr. Crow is going to go through here.
Mr. Chair and members, the operating capital, there's a printout that's the 2006-2007 reserve for operating capital on the top. Looks like this, dated 4-1-08. Districts under this proposal would be allowed, as Mr. Strom noted, to transfer up to $51 per pupil out of their operating capital reserve into their general fund. To get a sense of what was happening out in districts, we have included in here a printout that shows each district and what their June 30th, 2007, so the end of last fiscal year, operating capital balance was. As you can see on the top, there was about $153 million in those funds, or in that reserve, which is about $165 per pupil. And you can go down for an individual district and see what their balance was at the end of last year and how much that is on a per pupil basis. A couple of notes. One, again, this is the end of last fiscal year's fund balance, so districts, one, all districts have generated revenue into this reserve through the operating capital revenue account. So if they didn't spend any of their money, they'll have more than what's listed on here. But at the same time, districts have been spending over the course of the last fiscal year some of the funds that are in this reserve account. And if they've spent more than they received in revenue this fiscal year, this balance would go down. If they have spent to this point less money than they were projected to receive in this revenue, this balance would be higher. So this is a snapshot that's not current, and we won't have current information, obviously, till the end of this fiscal year on what those operating balances are. But the provision just basically says if you have the money, you can transfer up to $51 of it. So, for your information.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there still a requirement for school districts to maintain a certain percentage in that account, or?
No.
Mr. Chair and Senator Bonas, no, there's no, under current law, there's no percentage minimum. As you can see, some districts have no balance in that fund, and they wouldn't, they would be able to, if their balance was $51 or less, they would be able to transfer the full amount into their, out of the reserve into their general fund.
Mr. Nolan?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Bonas, I was just going to remind you, this is often the account that you get asked to make transfers from on a regular basis. So this provision would give the districts some one-time authority to make a transfer up to $51 per pupil without coming and asking you for it.
Representative Bradley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Bonoff, this was an idea that actually just kind of came up on the spur of the moment from Representative Heidgerken in the House Committee. We were hearing a parade of fund transfers from this fund, and we were lamenting that we couldn't do more for schools this year, so he just said, you know, why don't, on a one-time basis only, because we are in a deficit mode and not doing as well by schools as we would like, just let all of them do it this time if they have the money, and if they have capital needs, they don't have to do it, and if they want to do less than 51 per pupil, they can, but just for this one time, not just the ones that had the bright idea to come here, but all of them have this flexibility, and so we decided to give it a whirl, and we do not intend to have it be permanent, because it is a good idea to have districts come and have to account for themselves as to why they are keeping up their building, but why they need the money in the general fund. So this is a one-time opportunity.
Senator Olson.
Representative Dreiling and Heidgerken, have you got any more rabbits to pull out of the hat next year than it is this year?
Senator Olson, we are scavengers. We look for rabbits in the hat and whatever we can do for students.
Well, I think this is good. Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, Representative Dreiling, I think this was a rabbit that you pulled out of the hat. So.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members, then there are a couple of named fund transfers in both bills. The Ballatin School District and the East Central School District are given authority to transfer funds above that $51 per pupil from their capital account to their unreserved general fund. The Hills Beaver Creek School District and the Ricori School District are given authority to transfer funds from their disabled access reserve account. And then the Virginia School District, under the House bill, as Mr. Crow mentioned when we went through the appropriations, the district was just given an outright appropriation. Under the Senate bill, the district was given the authority to transfer money from their debt redemption fund. The proposed compromise here would be to allow the district just to levy that amount, but not to have it be a levy related to the debt redemption fund. So just a separate levy of the amount requested by the Virginia School District. Section 49 is the provision that adds one-time money to the formula of $51 per pupil. Then the next several sections have to do with the Alternative Teacher Compensation Program. Let me just briefly, I think probably easier than looking at the language here, is to talk about in concept what's happened. The date has been frozen for new applications, so if the district does not have a pending application as of March 20th, 2008, essentially the district is not going to be able to participate until 2011. So there's essentially a two-year time period where districts that have not yet applied to the department would not be eligible to qualify for alternative teacher compensation revenue. This is the first change. The House provision going into conference committee was 1 year. The Senate provision was 5 years. The second change has to do with whether or not this program is a part of general education, and the recommendation here is that the alternative teacher compensation would be rolled out of general education and be constructed as a separate categorical program. So these are the next several sections on the Senate side. So essentially what's happening, a couple of things with alternative teacher compensation. Those that are in the program or those that applied before March 20th would still be eligible for revenue for 2009 and 2010. All other districts that have not yet applied to the department would have to wait until 2011 to participate in the program.
Section 51 through 54 of the House and Section 25 and 26 of the Senate are part of the growth-based value-added, the report card, and those sections were left unresolved. The Senate did come into the conference with carrying a cost for some of this. The House did not, and as Mr. Nauman went through the spreadsheet, there currently is not a cost for the these provisions of the bill. Section 55 of the House, the expedited process on specific learning disabilities, this provision didn't have any direct ties to the appropriation, and so that suggested to be moved to policy.
Mr. Chair, members, Section 56 was the No Child Left Behind provision that was added to the House bill. The recommendation here is that provision be dropped. Section 57 and 58 are also involved with the unresolved sections of this bill.
Article 2, Section 31 is the enrollment and transportation aid for... I'll leave that to Mr. Nauman to come back to us. And then Article 2, Section 32 was the limitation on alternative compensation, and this language was combined with the House, as Mr. Strom just mentioned. The House rose linked alternative teacher compensation off for 1 year, and the Senate 5, and so a combination of the language was will be included.
Just to back up to Section 31, this is when we went with the Senate pattern of how to address the Rushford-Peterson provisions. This is the enrollment and transportation aid provision for fiscal year 2010 for the Rushford-Peterson school district. Then Article 2, Section 33 of the Senate, this is the Lancaster provision. Again, the decision was made to go with the, or the recommendation was made to go with the House approach, which was 3 years only of an additional $100,000 for the district because of the sparsity issues in Lancaster.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Follick.
I just want to, Mr. Chair and members, the early childhood language isn't in here, and we would think it would be in this section or right around this section.
Yeah, it should. I think Representative Grayling penciled it in. That's probably where it would.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, that was in a separate article in the House, and didn't get added to this sheet, so the intention is that should be on here.
Okay, so it will be included?
Yeah.
At the very end, it was just inadvertently left off this list.
Thank you.
And, Mr. Chair, Article 2, Section 34 was the sparsity transportation levy. This was a provision in the Senate that the Senate Tax Committee added, and that provision was not carried here. And then we have some appropriation sections and the repealer, which needs to be modified, most of the provisions having to deal with the rollout of alternative compensation.
Okay. All right. Representative Slavik and Representative Peterson, and who else? You want to just talk about the early childhood?
Mr. Chair, this is a provision bill by Representative Peterson and Senator Clark. They've come to an agreement for the State Advisory Council on Early Childhood Education and Care. So they worked on some language with adding legislators and parents to the group, the duties of the group, and having a goal that all children are school-ready by 2020, and then administratively where the money is going to come from. I think the members all have copies. Right now it's in amendment form, but if we could just make sure the language gets into the bill.
Okay. I think you could go.
It's the SCH 1812A3 amendment.
It's an
appropriation. Okay. Members, did you get a copy of this? Do you all have copies?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You can see the different parts of it, but there's the membership and duties. Really, this is language. You can see on line 1.12 from the federal Head Start School Readiness Act, the governor can appoint an advisory council, and we're working to work with the governor's office so we can have one council instead of two separate ones. And it has the duties laid out there, the goal on line 1.25, and then the administration and where the money comes from in subdivision 3. So it's all been agreed to, so we're hoping it's going to make the final bill, Mr. Chair.
Representative Slavik, I saw Senator Clark was here earlier, and I think she had to leave, but she was party to it, and the governor was party to it, too?
Senator Clark gave her blessing and signed off on it, as well as the governor's office has worked very closely on this. Because it's taking this Head Start advisory council he can appoint, and so we're working with them just to have that one and this be the same thing.
Okay.
And they've worked with us over several hours, really. Representative Peterson did a lot of the work. I don't know if Representative Peterson has any comments at this time, just that there's an agreement.
Thank you very much. I think you really covered it all, and Senator Clark has worked very closely with all of us and actually with the governor's office, and the final language has been approved by everyone.
Senator Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The other thing to note is that we do talk about the funding that could be used for this, and it is also our hope that there will be funds that come from the United Way so that, in fact, we will not end up using this money, and that the money that we have will be able to go directly towards the children, which is our hope. And so it is we do support this, and I too have been working with Senator Clark.
Thank you very much. Thank you. And staff will be sure to be part of it.
Thank you.
And then we have Mr. Piccolo. Did you want to testify? Okay. This has to do with the permanent school trust fund. And if you can kind of keep it very short, we have to be out of here by 12:30. So
I'll be very short, Senator Stump. And members, my name is Eugene Piccolo from the Minnesota Associates Charter Schools, and we just want to speak in opposition to the long-term permanent school fund issue, because when that would go in effect, that would create a two-tier system of funding for students in public schools. It would codify a difference in funding just on the matter of which schools parents and children choose for their education. And so we strongly oppose that going forward. We know it's been taken out of this year's bill for this next fiscal year, but we really have great concerns about that going forward, because it does set up two tiers of funding for students in public schools.
Thank you. Any questions? All right. Then we have Representative Mariani and I believe Representative Rummel on the statewide testing and should be the growth model, which would be, I think that was on the first page, sections 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Mr. Chair. That also would include sections 51, 52, 53, and 54, I believe, because those involve the task forces that are set up to be able to work on these multiple measures that are established inside this, this report card. Mr. Chair, I obviously will respect the wishes of the Conference Committee in terms of how it wants to be able to shape this bill and going forward. But I do want to share a little bit of anxiety that I have over possibly jettisoning policy language from this bill related related to this issue. And part of the anxiety, quite frankly, I'm just real, blunt, that to the degree that this bill becomes a successful bill leading to law, like any other major finance bill, it provides the kind of leverage that makes it possible
for policy to wind up also kind of benefiting from the coattails. And in fact, last year, Senator Rummel and Representative Reinert and others led a very successful effort to disentangle the report card from the administration's use of the report card, in my opinion, to blur the lines between what we had set out to do years before, which was telling a Minnesota story of how we assess our schools, and made it subservient to the NCLBAYT designation. We're not battling AYP or NCLB, but the point is that last year, being able to sort of ride the coattails of a bill that eventually got signed, the K-12 finance bill, we were able to do some pretty significant take some pretty significant steps in terms of policy to start to resort out the legislature's intent regarding the report card. And I have to tell you, I don't believe it was ever our intent years ago to have the report card de facto become the AYP reporting mechanism for this state. So bluntly, my concern one is that to the degree, again, that this bill can be successful, it can provide good leverage for some really important work that Senator Rummel and Representative Reinert have spent 6-7 months working on. It's actually kind of unusual. I've been here for a number of years, and to have House and Senate members work that closely and that diligently and engaging a broad array of stakeholders across the state isn't something we often see. And so to the degree that I can honor their work and be successful with it in any way possible, I'm making an appeal that we try to keep that language within this bill. The other thing, a more practical, I suppose, matter, Mr. Chair, is that there are spreadsheet connections, with the report card. The Senate, in my opinion, wisely, did an appropriation in the spreadsheet to cover report card expenses. The House position on that, by the way, Mr. Chair, is that we had anticipated, since we do annually appropriate $1.15 million to the department for the development of a value-added tool, which frankly I have not seen yet. I know I have a difference of opinion with the department on this, but we've been appropriating that for a number of years. And I'm not sure that we've really gotten a benefit out of that. Nonetheless, our thinking in the House was that to the extent that there are expenses related to Senator Rummel and Kathy Breiner, or Senator Breiner's work, it will be covered within that ongoing appropriation. Now, of course, there's agreement to date among the working group and apparently the conference committee members that we're going to capture that value-added appropriation and then some other statewide testing appropriations, which would mean that it sort of slams the door on the ability for this report card work group's expenses to be covered, but for the appropriation that the Senate has wisely put in its spreadsheet separate from that value-added appropriation. And so for me, I'm trying to sort out, how do we move forward with, I have a policy bill, and we're certainly going to vet this out as best as we can, but at the end, my fear is I wind up, with all sorts of agreements with the department, and I do think we can arrive at an agreement with the department and among the House and Senate conferees on my bill, but it's all going to be contingent on the conference committee being able to hold that spreadsheet appropriation. And so it raises questions for me, how do we coordinate that? And if we can't coordinate it, that would be terrific. So Mr. Chair and members, I guess my request would be that you keep the policy language in. I think you've got a funding spreadsheet rationale to do that. I understand there are some sticky policy issues, and Mr. Chair, you've identified those in the past few weeks, and I know that the conference committee, given its huge charge, is going to find it really hard pressed to try to negotiate that out. But we certainly stand ready to help with that. At the very least, Mr. Chair, I think it's vitally important that the that the appropriation that the Senate has identified for this work remain in this bill throughout its tenure, which then gives us room in the policy committee to play this out. So, Mr. Chair, that's those are my thoughts on it. My final thoughts on it, too, for all members here is, you know, I really think this is major, major policy work on the part of both the House and the Senate. I think that the issue on the table before us is who gets to set education policy in the state of Minnesota. I don't begrudge the Department of Ed's professional efforts to do that, but quite frankly, members, I don't think it's just up to the legislative branch to do that. I think it's very much up to the executive branch to do that. I think it's very much up to the legislative branch to do that. And that's really the issue in many ways that's on the table before us. So I think this is really vitally, this isn't just another project. I think this is vitally important policy for us. So with that, I probably said more than I should have, but thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Mariani. Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I'd like to echo Representative Mariani's, you know, the will of the committee and what you have to do, you have to do. But I would like to make the case that financing public education and accountability go hand in hand. I'm going to say that again. Financing public education and accountability go hand in hand. We have talked over and over again about transparency in our policy and in our funding. One of the things that this bill does is give the public a clear view of what's going, a clearer view of what's going on in our schools. And just as you argued earlier that the levy language ought to stay in the finance bill because it has an impact on levies, I believe that when the public has a clear view of what is going on in their schools, it will impact their attitudes towards those levies. They need to see where their money is going. Currently, the report card gives half the story. The report card talks about children who do not make proficiency, and in some cases, when there's a population within a school that doesn't make proficiency, the entire school is labeled as not making annual yearly progress, which is a very partial and very negative view. And I believe our public and our parents deserve a completer view. And so the value-added portion of the report card, the course-taking portion, gives the public a clear view of what they are getting for their dollars. So I think that this particular piece of policy, and I'm not so sure it's major policy, it's because we do have a report card policy already on statute. We already have in statute the mandate to have a growth factor. We already have in statute multiple measures, and this bill simply follows through on that. It does have a fiscal impact. And for that reason, I would at least argue for the appropriation, if not even the whole policy in this bill, because I think it is so closely tied.
Thank you, Senator Rummel. I think the discussion hinges around what leadership has told us in terms of not carrying policy in the finance bill, and that's really kind of the issue. And we're trying to figure out, you know, a way to carry the money, and have the policy be the discussion point in the policy committee, which I think, I mean, I know we can do it. It's just, and I appreciate us, you know, either spelling out where that money is, so that they have the money to do it. But I think both of you are right. It's a policy issue, one that we spent many hours.
9 months.
9 months. So it's very important, and I respect your very dedicated efforts on all sides, you know, to deal with that. But I do think it is policy, and I'm trying to respect the leadership requesting us to stick to the finance end of it. So, Representative Grimes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the House is saying that this policy, because it goes with finance, could be in this bill, and we respect that the Senate is following the leadership better than the House would wish to follow the leadership. And but I think in talking with Senator Stump here, we may be able to come up with a financial arrangement that will give the policy language the financing that it needs to have a strong position in the policy committee. And so I'll let Senator Stump talk about that, or Rep. Mr. Nauman.
Well, I think the Senate side, we had, I think we're carrying $188,000, I can't recall all of the discussion around the $188,000, but I, maybe Mr. Nauman recalls.
Mr. Chairman, the $188,000 was generated through some modifications to the original language, which was fiscal noted. This would have been Senator Rummel's original bill. Some pieces were jettisoned on the Senate side, and the remaining cost relative to the fiscal note was $188,000. So we carried that as a rider on the department's overall appropriation. Through conversations with yourself in the House, the decision was made not to have the department carry that money any longer. And that's, I think, where you're left with is, do you want to have this as a policy issue in this bill, or move it over to the policy bill for a conversation there?
Representative Brainer.
Thank you, Senator Stump. Just a couple of quick remarks. My concern, I don't really know the logistics of the relationship between moving this in policy and moving it in finance, but I have a concern as a legislator and as a citizen as an advocate for education, that we don't lose sight of what is a very critical discussion, because it's played against on both sides. And I'll just say that, and what I observed happened in the Senate is, on the policy level, we lost several provisions of this bill because it had financial implications, and now we're running the risk of losing it in this bill because it doesn't have financial implications. And I would, it's sort of a catch-22 in terms of how to move meaningful discussion on an issue that certainly has financial implications, but may have, the fiscal note has ranged quite a bit over the time of this discussion. And I would just ask you as educational leaders to please pay attention to the importance and the quality of the discussion and figure out where it can take place instead of kind of moving it somewhere else so that we fail to engage it. And wherever that is, I'm willing to answer or respond to any substantive questions on the policy itself. But that's just my request, and as you look at this, to don't lose sight of its importance.
I just want to restate that none of these issues are lost. I mean, the big discussion on policy will come in the policy in the education bill. And it's not as if it's not in this bill, it doesn't exist. I want to be clear about that.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Bonhoff.
Mr. Chair, I just want to make sure that all the members know that we in the Senate do feel strongly about this language, and that we did work, you know, for many months, and we know how important it is. But I can also tell you that our leadership is adamant about policy not being in it, and we have spent hours and hours discussing that. And so I'm concerned that if we stick to keeping this in, then it's actually going to jeopardize our ability to go forward as quickly as we'd like to do with this bill. And so that's why I'm in support of Senator Stump's suggestion that we find a way to move forward.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Romo.
I didn't quite understand the discussion that Mr. Nauman said about what we would do in terms of holding some dollars aside. Are we going to do
actually,
that?
I think Mr.
Mr. Chair and members, part of the proposal is to include Section 19 on page 49A1 of the Senate side, which has a reduction in statewide testing, but with one change, and that is that on line 45.12, the Senate bill struck the $1.15 million each year for the value-added index assessment model, and then that stricken language would be reinstated, so current law would have a base appropriation for fiscal 2009 and later of $1,154,000 value-added model, and that would stay in current law under this proposal.
Representative Growley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the House is thinking that because we did not take the Senate position to strike that actually does free up the legislature to reassign what how the value added would be implemented in the department. So that's a boon right there for this effort, whether it takes place here or in the policy committee. And then further, and that's where I need a little clarification from Mr. Nauman, the Senate is offering up to figure out a way to also fund the $188,000 to make it an even stronger effort in this bill to support the work of the policy committee. And I also was advised by staff, however, if we put that money in, that we do need some language in here as a placeholder. So maybe the staff could help us out with that.
Mr. Nauman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Grinland, with all due respect, that's a piece of the conversation I'm not familiar with. I know that the issue, I mean, to the extent that the two of you, if that's been agreed to, I'm not aware of it. It was my understanding that the spreadsheet that we discussed earlier did not have the 188, and it does not have that on there. That doesn't mean it couldn't be agreed to. I'm just not familiar with where the state of the conversation is.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know if you've considered at all, you know, this has been a significant policy, you know, kind of a combination policy issue. Have you considered at all the possibility of it going on its own? It appears that there's work to be done between the House and Senate versions, or am I... If I haven't tracked as much the difference between what's been happening in the House and Senate on it. There's more work to be done there, too, in trying to get, hopefully reach some agreement all the way around. And because it is significant. It represents some change in policy that we've established before.
and it merits careful consideration.
This is a conversation going on here. Senator Olson, I don't want to have you restate that, but I think the intent that we would like to do is to have the policy in the policy bill and the funding in here. And I think that's, if that's acceptable, we can do that, I think.
Mr. Chairman and members, it's a little unconventional, but if the decision is to move the policy over to the policy bill and you still would like to carry $188,000 of that Senate position as a writer on the Department of Education budget, you can do that.
Mr. Chair, I think that meets a baseline concern, because quite frankly, without an appropriation, the policy negotiations become meaningless. And so, you know, perhaps the conventional thing, perhaps we ought to do the conventional thing, which is to keep the policy wedded to the appropriation. But I think, I certainly understand the pressure you're under and the directive you're under. We have carved out some caveats here where we do have some pure policy language here already in the bill in other forms. I think what I would be looking for is a real strong and clear pathway within this bill that says, here's how we're going to take care of the expenses related to the report card. And then I'm obviously collegially looking for commitments for conferees, to hold to that and to make that happen. And my commitment would be, Mr. Chair, the quid pro quo would be to hold to good policy that reflects both what the House and the Senate can be comfortable with and can work cooperatively with the executive branch in that regard.
Representative Growley.
Thank you, Senator Stump. And, I agree that conventional would be ideal, and since we're not getting agreement on that, I very much appreciate the Senate's willingness to extend the unconventional. And I think it shows that all of us here at this table do support the long work that's been done by Representative Breinert and Senator Rummel and Representative Mariani and others to actually have this come to some sort of fruition this year. We really are interested in this because it's part of the education finance reform, and we need it in some shape or form so we can do the innovation funding plan that we have in that bill. So we really need to be getting something out of this in place when we act on that next year. So I appreciate the Senate's coming halfway here.
Okay. All right, I think our fiscal people have a solution. So, if that's acceptable, then the policy will go to the policy committee. The finance will carry in here, mm-hmm. and I think that will work. Do you know any other outstanding issues? Okay, I know we're running short of time. Is there anything else that we've left, Representative Mariani?
Mr. Chair, you do have the Taurus, I think it's the Taurus Gray language on, it would be House 58. I had the bill in the House, Article 328 was Senate. I think that's the achievement gap. On page 4, is that correct?
Yes.
And I noted that that's unresolved, and I think that's the only other unresolved issue there.
Okay.
Representative Mariani, I think what we'll do is do the same on that provision, so that the policy for that will go into the policy committee, and we'll carry what are we carrying in there?
Mr. Chairman, I think you would carry $50,000. I think we would want to, in both cases, want to say up to, so if it didn't happen, then we wouldn't be tying up the money.
And that's a one-to-one match, I think.
Mm-hmm. That's right, Mr. Chair. There are outside sources willing to match this.
All right. Okay, good. Thank you so much, everyone, for all of Senator Olson.
So, Mr. Chair, I'm trying to understand this. We have policy here that applies to other appropriations, but in this case, we want to separate the policy from the appropriation.
Well,
is that correct?
We've tried very hard to go through. Our bill has gotten smaller and smaller and smaller. And, I don't know, we've lost a lot of pages. That policy went over to policy committee, which is the direction that we've been given from both leadership and from the chairs of the finance committee, or committees. And it'll make their job easier because they're struggling in the big budget division trying to figure out, you know. So they bring in all these division chairs and policy people, and so I think from that angle it's unusual, but
part of it.
I knew it would be kind of a difficult job because you got all, you know, you're loading everything into one committee, and that makes for quite a confusing situation. But everybody feel somewhat comfortable.
Mr. Chair, it's always a question mark in the legislature, no matter what we're working on. But I think as long as there's good, strong collegial agreements to move in separate directions, but to support one another in that process, and given the directives that both you and Chair Gladwell have been given, I think that's perhaps the best we can do at this point.
Thank you. I see some heads moving, nodding, but thank you very much for coming, and we'll try to get this resolved and
all the recommendations.
We're directing staff that this is a recommendation that goes, it's not like I say, it's not a conference committee, but this is a recommendation to the budget committee and for E-12 education finance. And so all of the discussion is actually a recommendation to them. So, very good. The working group is adjourned. And